I think that is when the switch really flipped in my brain, that I was just done caring about whether or not my body looked like anybody else's.
Disruns Radio, episode 551 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode, just a reminder that the book is finally finished. If you pre-ordered the book way back when, gosh, almost a year ago now, A, sorry that it's taken so long. B, your copies are coming. The books have been ordered. They're on the way to my house. As soon as I get them, I will sign them and turn right around, head right back to the post office, and drop them in the mail. Everything is ready to go, just waiting for the books. Get them signed, get them out to you. If you didn't pre-order the book, if you're new to the show, you have no idea what the heck I'm talking about. I've been writing this book for way too long, but it's finally finished. It's called Be Ready on Race Day, and it's all about how to get you ready to go, how to write your own training plan, basically. It's a how-to manual to help you bridge the gap between one-size-fits-all plans, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't think they're that good. They have a slight use to them, but for the most part, for most of us, life gets crazy. We get trained and something needs to be adjusted, and then what the hell do you do because you got this one-size-fits-all plan? And it bridges the gap between that and actually having a coach, somebody that you're paying for. So if you don't have room in the budget to hire a coach, but you're ready to get off this one-size-fits-all, almost good-for-nothing type of training, and you maybe wanted to figure out how to do it yourself, or you're just curious about how I go about creating plans for my clients, because that's basically what it is. It's exactly what I do when it comes to creating a plan. Head over to BeReadyOnRaceDay.com. You can get the book there, or obviously on the Amazons. It's available in digital and physical, soft copy book. So check it out, BeReadyOnRaceDay.com. And now we'll go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, I'm pretty sure that we all kind of know on some level that, hopefully at more than one level, that runners don't come in any one particular model. We come in all shapes, sizes, colors, speeds, abilities, whatever the case might be. And today's guest not only believes that to be true, and believe that there's no such thing as an average runner, but she boldly proclaims it pretty much everywhere that she goes. She's an author, a coach, and recently launched her own podcast, and it's all about kind of promoting this belief that anyone can be a runner. And so it's a pleasure today to be able to go a few easy miles with Ms. Jill Angie. Thanks for joining us today, Jill, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Denny. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to be here.
Certainly. And like we were saying beforehand, we've this has been a connection that's been long in the making, but glad to finally make it happen and have a little chat. And guys, if you're not familiar with Jill and what she's got going on and the great things that she's doing in her niche of the running community, go check out the website, notyouraveragerunner.com. And on the Instagram handle, if you want to connect with there, is the same as the website, Not Your Average Runner. And as you'll see as we get going through with all of the different pots that she's stirring, Not Your Average Runner is a pretty common theme. So that's going to be something you're going to hear a bit about as we go along. But we'll have links to everything linked up, as always, in the show notes, disruns.com/551 for today's episode. So, Jill, the way we always start off the show is with the same simple question for everybody. It's the only same simple question for everybody, but for some folks, the answer is pretty easy. For some folks, the simple question can be the hardest one to answer. And it's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Oh, they're all my favorite. Okay, I mean, I'm really partial to the 5K because it's something I can just go and say, oh, I'm going to do a 5K tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I know that it'll be fun and the atmosphere will be exciting. And, it's just something I can like knock out in the morning and then come home and grab some coffee and go on with my day. So I love the 5K distance. And I love the 5K distance, especially because that's where most of my clients sort of enter the running scene with me, because they're like, that's sort of their dream distance. Is they're not a runner and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I'd really like to start running. And so they're like, I'm not even looking at a 10K or a half marathon or a marathon. They're just like, what's the first thing on my list? So I love the 5K for that reason. But I also love the half marathon because like it's It's just such a fun way to spend a morning. I know that sounds weird and crazy, but like I call it like a catered workout, right? Like you're going to go out, you're going to be enjoying running, hopefully in a beautiful setting for, you know, in my case, about 3 hours. And there are people cheering you on and there's other people on the course. And like, I always like pick somebody when I'm doing a half marathon. And I just like, I'm a back of the pack runner and I'll just fall into step with somebody who looks like maybe they're having a hard time and just sort of talk to them and see if I can't, you know, make a connection with that particular person in that moment. And you get a lot of opportunities to do that when you're out running for 3 miles. And then, of course, there's always somebody to give you water. Mm-hmm. There's always somebody to direct the traffic. And usually there's a medal at the end. So, like, for that reason, the half marathon is probably my other favorite.
Gotcha. That's the half marathon certainly is a pretty common answer for a number of reasons. And the 5K is one of those answers that when I get that, I don't necessarily try to push back because your favorite's your favorite, like whatever, you know, it is what it is, but it's definitely a distance that for me, it's like, you know, if I'm going to race a 5K, like it's just hard. It's fast. It's hard. It's not the whole lot of fun, but I love what you said that, you know, for a lot of your clients and a lot of the folks that are in your circles that you're connected with, that listen to your show, things like that, that it's a, you know, it's kind of like that first hurdle. And I think that as some of us who are maybe a bit more advanced in our quote unquote running careers, we've been doing it for, you know, 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, 10 years, whatever the case might be. It's easy to forget that, you know, whatever we think about the 5K right now, like that was probably our first kind of hurdle that we had to climb as well. So it's a great perspective that you brought, and I think that it makes perfect sense that would be a distance that you enjoy as well, because of, you know, that's most of the people that you work with are right there struggling with the 5K, and that's a great way to get into the sport.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, as a coach, it's like every time I see one of my clients complete their first race, like it's thrilling to see the excitement on their face and the pride on their face, especially if they've got family at the finish line and if it's something they've been working towards for a while. So I kind of feel like I get to re-experience the joy of my very first race every single time one of my clients finishes and or somebody in my community at all. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's just super fun.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And the beauty, you know, is as much as like I said, I kind of maybe talk down on the 5K once in a while, just from a perspective of I don't like running the fight, like it's just a race that I don't particularly enjoy. One of the best parts about it is that you can find them just about anywhere, just about any time. So it's always, you know, unlike, you know, maybe a half or a full or whatever, even 10K sometimes, they're a little bit harder to find, they're a little bit less accessible in that, you know, you can't just go out and run one whenever you want, basically. And with the 5K, you almost always can, you know, as long as the weather cooperates, like you can find one and go do it. So it really is, for all the reasons that you mentioned, I mean, it's such a great first step into the running world.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I love about the 5K is there's usually not a time limit.
Right.
Like with a half marathon or even a 10K, and for sure with marathons, like there are time limits. And so if you're somebody who needs to do a walk run approach, which most of my clients are doing the walk run approach, if you're somebody who needs that, then you're looking at maybe running a 15 or a 16 minute mile. And there are plenty of races out there. And even the Disney races, for example, like a lot of my clients love the Disney races and they get very frustrated because the cutoff is 16 minute mile and they're very rigid about that. Whereas with a 5K, it's super unlikely that you're going to find one that has a cutoff time that you can't meet. So I think for that reason, it's also very approachable for people. And so it's just, you know, it's something that has fond memories for me. I mean, my very first race was a 5K, and I think, yeah, it's just something that seems manageable and doable for a lot of people.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, and you're right. It's certainly important as well, because the last thing you want for anything, I mean, the last thing any of us want for anything that we're trying, something new, is to go out and feel like it's impossible. Like the first step is almost impossible. Like almost like, you know, there could be a failure. And yeah, having you know, the more accessible to the new folks into the running community that any race can be, and certainly a race like the 5K or something along those lines, and even, you know, like you said, even some of the longer distance, it'd be great if maybe Disney would allow a little bit longer time on the course for some folks, just because it does make it opens it up to more and more people, which is ultimately, I mean, what I think we all kind of want. You know, it's you know, something that we enjoy, obviously, and sharing it with others and helping other people to find join the sport as well is always a beautiful thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So, how did you get into the running world there, Jill? I mean, you know, like you say, like it says all over the website, you know, it's something that you kind of started in. I believe it was to kind of like to start losing some weight and kind of eventually it took hold of you. But, you know, for whatever quote unquote an average runner looks like, you know, you built a brand about being a not average runner. So, how did somebody who calls herself a not an average runner find and fall in love with the sport of running?
So I love how you put that it sort of took hold of me, because it really did. And I think, you know, I have horror stories of being in high school and, you know, having to run the mile and being able to do it, but, you know, really, but not really, not like always last. And, you know, I was pretty athletic in high school, but I still hated running. And, you know, but I was a tennis player, which, for Pete's sake, like there's a lot of running in tennis. So, yeah, so I think, you know, as I went through college, I gained weight and, you know, got out of college and I thought, all right, I got to lose some weight. So I thought running burns a lot of calories. That's what I'll do. But running, I just could not figure out a way to do it that didn't make me feel like a complete failure, because, you know, at the time, this was like the mid to late 90s. And, you know, I'd go into the local sporting goods store and everything would be like a size medium. Mm-hmm. I was not. And I'm thinking, hey, if you want me to go out there and exercise and lose weight, like you've got to make clothes in my size. So like that already was kind of defeating. And so I sort of let my brain get the best of me, and I would stop and I would start and I'd stop and I'd start. And I did that for a number of years. And I actually got to the point where I like ran an entire 5K, did my first race. I fell in love with it. And then the next day I just didn't run again for like 2 years. So I think a lot of people have that similar story of stopping and starting, but it really started to get into my soul, I think, when I started working with a personal trainer. And this was, oh gosh, it was almost 10 years ago now. And she trained out of her home. So it wasn't like I was going to a big gym where there's a lot of like guys lifting weights. It was very unintimidating. She was also a yoga teacher, and she taught me a lot about just sort of appreciating what my body could do in the moment and sort of getting away from judging myself and becoming more positive towards what I could do. And like, I just had this moment where I thought, I should probably do a triathlon. And I don't know what. Actually, I know exactly why, because I was married to an Ironman triathlete. I forgot to mention that part. And so I'd see him like, you know, he'd go out and he'd be like, all right, I'm going to go run into the city and back. And we lived about 15 miles outside of Philadelphia. And he literally meant he was going to run like on his feet. It wasn't like he was going to get in the car and run. Like he would just go and do a 30-mile training run. And I'm thinking, this is not right. I got to get with the program. So I decided I was going to do a sprint triathlon. And I was like working on losing weight, but I was probably 240 pounds at least on the day of the race. But it was an all women's race. And I don't know, it just got, like you said, it just took hold of me because I felt so strong and so powerful. And I pretty much finished dead last. It was pouring rain. And I was just like sobbing tears of joy because I realized like, I can do this. I don't have to be a size 6 to do this. Like I can show up, I can give my best race, I can love the sport, and I don't have to do it like everybody else does it to really enjoy it. And I think that was like a sort of pivotal moment for me. And I've only done a few triathlons since then. It's like triathlon's not necessarily my favorite thing, but I really kind of stuck with the running. And then once I realized for myself, like, hey, I can do this, I was like, I have to tell people about this. I need to let everybody know that you can just go out and you're allowed to do whatever you want. You can show up and do a race and not have to run a 10-minute mile or an 8-minute mile. Like you can just go and have fun. So that's sort of when I got the idea, like I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to become a trainer. And I wrote the books and started coaching people because I felt like I had the biggest secret in the world that everybody needed to know.
In that first race, whether we want to talk about the first triathlon or when you started getting a little bit more into the running world, at that point, did you, for lack of a better way of asking the question, did you see many other people that quote unquote looked like you, or do you feel like you really were standing out as far as, you know, the surface characteristics of here's all these people at this triathlon or at this 5K race or whatever the case might be, and I look like none of them?
Well, for the first 5K that I did, and that was in 1998, I was absolutely in the I don't know how to put it. Like I was in the minority of the, you know, people, because most, I mean, this was, again, it was 20 years ago. Right. And so that was when, like, I remember somebody telling me, like, oh, you've been running, you should try this thing called a 5K. I'm like, what's a 5K? I had no idea what it was. And so I showed up and I ran the race, but everybody there was like, they just took off like a shot. And I'm like sort of plodding along in the back going, uh-oh, I don't belong here. But, and I think I kind of had that thought for probably at least another 10 years. I had the thought that I didn't really belong there. But the triathlon, I mean, it wasn't all women's triathlon. It was the She-Rock series, which is I think they got bought out by another race series. So they don't do those really nice all women's triathlons anymore. But I was still probably in the, you know, 10%, I guess, of like women that were overweight. I think there were maybe a couple other women my size, but out of a field of a couple thousand, like, you know, 98% of them were what I would consider athletic looking.
Right.
Yeah. But the one thing I loved about that race is I think that's where I started to realize, like, just because you're athletic looking, I was talking to a lot of the women, like, while we were waiting for the swim start. And honestly, I was terrified to get, I should back up. I was on the swim team in high school. And yeah, I was still really afraid to get into the open water and swim for this race. I had this kind of like, oh my gosh, somebody's going to kick me in the head and I'm going to drown. And so, right. So I wore a wetsuit, and because I was wearing a wetsuit for this race, there was one wave of wetsuit women. And so I was talking to some of the other women, and they were all really thin. But we all had one thing in common, and that was that it was our first triathlon. We'd never, you know, done that distance before, and we were all really nervous. And so that opened my eyes to, like, body shape, sure, is one factor, but talking to these other women and realizing that, like, hey, they were skinny, but they were really still scared, like I was, of whether they could finish the race, kind of made me realize that body size doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, I'm sure for you was a real great eye opener or great realization that, like, that maybe this could be for me, because I feel like if it was me, and if I felt like I was, you know, just completely not fitting in, even though I maybe don't feel like I'm always a conformist, but, you know, I like to kind of blend in a little bit sometimes. Feel like it might be hard to keep coming back. Did you have that struggle in those early days, or did you, you know, during that first triathlon, some of those early races, did you really fall, you know, it took hold of you, but did you take hold of it back, or were you fighting it for a while?
I think the triathlon was the pivotal that flipped the switch in me, where I was like, I'm done worrying about whether my body fits in with anybody else. I belong here just as much as the next person. So that really was the pivotal moment. I think the shift was happening. I was doing 5Ks and 10Ks up, you know, while I was training for the triathlon, I did some 5Ks and just kind of like local small races. And I would show up and I'd be like, yeah, I'm the fattest person here. And I didn't worry too much about it because there weren't a lot of stakes, because I already knew I could finish a 5K and I already knew I could finish a 10K. So I think for the triathlon, I'd never done that before and I didn't know if I could finish. I mean, I think conceptually, of course I could finish because I could do all the distances individually, but I still hadn't like strung them all together in one event like that. So there was that, you know, and I think for a lot of us, body image is really just another version of insecurity about, I can't do this, I'm not good enough. And so that's sort of how it popped up for me with the triathlon was, oh, I'm too fat to do this. And I really knew I wasn't. I knew I could finish, but I think that is when the switch really flipped in my brain, that I was just done caring about whether or not my body looked like anybody else's, because clearly I could still finish, and that was the most important thing to me.
Right, right. So then fast forwarding more to today, to you know, the last 6 months or whatever, what is the difference that you're noticing, or how are things changing for the, you know, what, I don't even know what's the proper terminology for the overweight runner, or the new runner that's maybe looking to get in shape? I like to think, and again, maybe perception isn't always the necessarily the rule, but I like to think that the running community is pretty inclusive, and I'm always inspired when I see all the different shapes and sizes of people that are at a race that I run. Like I said, I'm going to assume that things have gotten better, but from your perspective, from the perspective of some of the clients, the people that are in your communities, are we as inclusive as I like to think that we are in the running community?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because a lot of my clients will say, oh, somebody made a comment about my weight and running. And I'm like, let me guess, they're not a runner. And she always says, yeah, you're right. Mm. So I find that most runners, at least the ones that I encounter, and sometimes I think I have blinders on because I just don't hear the negativity. And so people might be saying it and I'm just not able to process it because it's just like, I just sort of refuse to accept that people are going to have a negative opinion sometimes. And like, it may be rose colored glasses, but it's working for me. But for real, I think most of the people that make comments about overweight runners aren't actually runners themselves, because runners are like, it's like this weird, creepy club and we want everyone to join it. And so we're like, I don't care if you're overweight, come on, you can do this. But one thing I'm noticing about the plus size running community is that there are, like, most of the clients that came to me in the beginning wanted to lose weight. And that was their big thing. Like, running was a path to losing weight. And now more and more women are realizing that running can be done for the sake of itself, just for the joy of the movement. And they really aren't interested in the weight loss because they're kind of cool with exactly how they look. Mm. And so they're just going to go out and they're running and they're not really thinking, oh, I need to burn off so many calories. Or they won't say that. They used to say to me, like, well, I'm on the beginning of my weight loss journey and I'm running to make that happen. And now they're like, well, I'm just running. Like, if I lose weight, awesome. If I don't, awesome. They really aren't as wrapped up in body size, and they're more excited about what can I do with the body I have right now.
Why do you think that any ideas why that shift has happened, or why you're seeing that shift in your clients that you're working with?
Well, partly because I'm constantly hammering that message.
At least they're listening. That's always a good sign.
They are. And I think that's a lot of the feedback I get when people read my books or they listen to my podcast, is they say, you know, Jill gives me permission to run like in the body I have right now. And actually, one of my programs is called Start Running in the Body You Have Right Now, because I don't think you need to be skinny to start. And I don't think running needs to be a path to weight loss. So for sure, it's me shouting that from the rooftops. But there's a lot of other female and male running coaches and running personalities and figures out there that are saying the same thing. And like, one of my friends, Myrna Valerio, is, I mean, I'm sure you've seen her. She's been all over the cover of Runner's World. And she's like, every time I turn around, I see her like in another video or something. She's basically, her whole blog is fat girl running. And she's not really looking to lose weight. She's looking to be the best runner she can be. And the weight is sort of secondary to that. And I think, you know, she basically preaches the same thing that I do. Like, just get out there and run. And like, if you want to lose weight, that's awesome. Go for it. But like, we're talking about running and, you know, being the best runner you can be in the body you have right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Myrna is, she's amazing. She was, I can't remember the number, but she was on the show a while back and we had a really fun conversation, and just love to see what she's doing. And just that message that she's sending and you're sending, that, you know what, do it because you like it. And if there is weight loss, great. And if that's a goal, great. And if not, that's great too. Like just get out there and you do you, and everything else will take care of itself.
Exactly. Yeah. So much easier that way.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. So where did all of the, you know, like you said, after the triathlon, you kind of, you know, decided to go into the kind of the personal training world and working with some runners and things like that. But how did the whole not your average runner brand kind of come around? Because I mean, like you said, there's a couple books, there's another one coming up in the fall, there's the podcast now, there's the coaching. How, you know, when did you decide to really make a thing out of this running thing, instead of just having it be kind of a, you know, something that you enjoy doing, but really kind of the center of your professional life at this point?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just sort of took hold of me. It's really, it was one day I woke up and I was like, I should do something more. I'd been a personal trainer full time for about 6 months at that point. And I was in the process of training for my own first half marathon. And so this was several years ago. And I just thought, you know, I need to help people do more than just train. Like I was realizing that the personal training, which was amazing, the clients would come to my house. I built out this really nice studio, but I was only, you know, I could only work with people in my neighborhood or people that were willing to drive to me. And I just kind of felt this need to really reach more people. And I encountered this woman who said, "Hey, I can help you write and publish a book." And I thought, a book. That sounds good. And so I remember the exact moment when I decided to do it. I was sitting at this, I live in Philadelphia, and we have this thing called Be Well Philly. And every year they do this big, like, 2-day boot camp fitness extravaganza. And so I was there with a couple of my girlfriends, and we're sitting there, you know, watching one of the speakers. And I whispered to them, "Okay, if I wrote a book about how you can be a fat girl and still go running, would you read it?" And they just looked at me like, "The hell are you talking about?" And then they stopped and they're like, "Yeah, I'd read that. And so I'm like, all right, that's good. I've got my like market assessment done. So I wrote the book, and
which is titled Running with Curves, by the way.
It's titled Running with Curves. And actually it's no longer, it might still be available on Amazon, like used copies, but it just got reissued this year under the name Not Your Average Runner.
Okay.
So I wrote the book Running with Curves, and, it just kind of took off. And so I had people emailing me and, you know, trying to Facebook message me and say, "Hey, like, we want to do more. Like, this is great. I love this book. What's next?" And I thought, oh, okay, I better offer something else. And that's sort of where the running piece came in. And I started really, really focusing in on runners. And then about a year and a half ago, I closed down the personal training studio because I really had so much going on with the running piece that I wanted to just go all in on that. And it, along the way, I wrote a couple more books and have been doing a bunch of stuff along those lines.
That's all. That's exactly what we're doing here. And I started with the podcast and I'm now getting into the books, and it sounds like you kind of started with the books and are getting into the podcast, which is, you know, just, you know, either way, you know, you start one area and continue to branch out and continue to try to serve, the needs of your audience and people that care about what you're doing. And that's awesome. So, when did the seed for the podcast get planted?
That is something that people have been asking me for a couple years, actually. And I really resisted it because I thought, I don't really have anything to say, which, like, come on, right? I'm sort of a nonstop talker anyway. Like, I can talk to a cactus and have a conversation. So that was a crazy reason not to do it. But what people were actually asking me for is they said, "Hey, will you make me a workout? Like, will you, like, speak over the music and tell me when to run and when to walk and give me inspirational stuff?" And I thought, all right, well, you're going to listen to that twice and get bored with it. And there's all these logistics of, like, oh, like, you know, how do I get the rights to all this music? And should I make an app? And it was like, oh, it's so expensive to make an app. And my whole brain was just kind of like, this is a terrible idea. It would be amazing, but I'm not independently wealthy. And so I'm just not going to do it. And then one day, I don't even remember whose podcast I was listening to. I can't remember. It might have been 300 Pounds and Running. And I thought, and I was a guest on that podcast too, like over a year ago. And I can't believe I didn't think of it myself. But I thought, oh, duh. Like, I don't have to make workouts for people. Like, I can just talk to them and teach them what I know. And I'm also a life coach too. And so I kind of weave life coaching in with the running piece. And I thought, that's really my sort of special magic that I bring to it, is not just I can teach you how to run, because anybody can teach you how to run. It's that, like, special insight that I have for my audience, which is, I know the things that your brain says to you about how you look and about your pace and about whether or not you can do it. Like, I know how to deal with all that stuff. And so once I kind of realized, like, for me, it's less about running. And there's certainly plenty of running instruction in the podcast, and it's all geared towards somebody who is plus size. But in addition to that, I have the piece of, like, I can help you with your inner mean girl, mm-hmm. because, oh my God, she's the inner mean girl in some of my clients is so loud that it keeps them from doing what they really want to do. And so that's kind of my whole approach to this, is getting you out of your head so that you can actually figure out what you're capable of.
Mm, I love it. When it comes to merging the life coaching and the run coaching, for lack of a better way of asking the question, how do those worlds come together? Because I feel like it makes sense, but at the same time, I'm not sure how it makes sense. If that makes any, well, what a terrible question. I feel like that makes sense, but I'm not sure it makes any sense. If that makes any sense, but how do you bring those two sides of your coaching life together to try to serve your audience?
So that's a great question, because I think for me, when I started running, the confidence that I got through running, the changes that I saw, not just to my body, but to my mind and how I looked at myself and how I kind of stopped caring what other people thought as I became more confident, like that was sort of interwoven. And I got trained as a life coach right around the same time that I was writing my first book. And so I sort of incorporated a lot of those themes. And at the time I wrote the first book, I wasn't actually a running coach yet. I was still a personal trainer, but I hadn't gotten certified with the RRCA or any of that stuff. And so I was really afraid to give a lot of technical instruction in my book. So my first book was more about the mental side of running than anything else. And so it's not necessarily like I coach you on running and I coach you on your life. They sort of weave together. And I think what I do as a life coach is I use a lot of running metaphors. And that just seems to work for me. So yeah, they sort of interweave very organically, and it's developed that way over the past 5 years.
As long as it's working together, and I say that, and then also, you know, I've said how many dozen times, I don't know, a bunch, that, you know, I feel like running is one of the best metaphors for life, and that the lessons that you can learn from running can easily translate into other areas. So it makes sense. Like I said, it makes sense that you could tie those worlds together, and then you just kind of, you know, figure it out as you go and continue to make the connections even more strong, I guess, probably.
Yeah, it's exactly how it works. It's so much fun.
good deal. With the podcast, so Not Your Average Runner, comes out once a week, right?
Yes, Thursday mornings it drops.
Thursday mornings. What's been the biggest eye opener for you when it comes to putting a podcast together? What was something that, I mean, because you're still, I think, what, 11, 12 episodes in, something like that, still fairly new-ish?
Yep. Yeah. It's just 12. The 12th one drops tomorrow.
Okay. What's been the big eye opener for you about the podcasting process, or has there been, or were you pretty prepared going into it?
So I guess there's been a lot of eye openers. The first is that it's both a lot more work and a lot less work than I expected. And I thought there was going to be a lot of technical stuff and like learning how to use all this different editing software and everything. And that was sort of overwhelming to me. So I just hired somebody. Shout out to Digital Freedom Productions because they're amazing. So I hired a service to do all the technical stuff so that I could focus completely on creating the best content possible. And so that was like, you know, sort of a big aha and shift for me. It's like, hey, like, let me just focus my energy on what I do best. Mm-hmm. And then the act of actually creating a podcast, I mean, I have to have the episode, the recording, to my producer well ahead of the time when it drops. So like, it forces me to really sit down and like connect with my community, ask them what they want to hear about, plan out the episodes in advance. And I think it's making me a better coach because I'm really having to think through like, okay, what do I need? Like, what's the most important thing for my clients and my followers and my listeners to know? And then I write out a script for every episode, and then I always go off script, but mm-hmm. at least I have a starting point where I like really sit down and think everything through. So I think that has been like sort of delightful. Like I kind of figured, oh, I'll just get on and start talking at the microphone. And that absolutely it does not work. If you're by yourself in your closet, 'cause I record in my closet and, yeah, so it's required me to get a lot more organized. And I think it's also inspired me to try new things myself with my running that, you know, people have said to me, like, I just recently did a 30-day run streak and I've never done a run streak before because I thought, you know, it's really not good to run every day. But people were talking about it. And I thought, okay, fine, I'm just going to give it a try. And lo and behold, like now I can't stop running every day.
Oh, wow.
Really surprised me that I would find myself in this place of like having to have a little heart to heart with myself and say, look, you really need to take a rest day. Like that's just not who I've been my whole life. And so I think podcasting has given me that because it's forcing me to try things just so that I can talk about them and so that I can give, you know, suggestions and give my opinion on them and, you know, offer up different things to different people. So yeah, that was kind of a long answer to your question, but and actually the best thing about podcasting that I found out is that it is amazing. It is an amazing way to really feel connected to my listeners because people will, they'll email me or they'll message me and say, oh yeah, you know, I had to do a 10 mile training run this morning and I just binge listened to all of your podcasts. We're best friends now. Did you know that? And I'm like, that just makes me so happy to know that like somebody is out there getting a benefit from the time that I'm spending in my closet.
Yes, indeed. I think we've all been there and kudos to you for already getting all kinds of feedback. I'm still 3.5 years like begging people, you know, email me once in a while, shoot me a message, shoot me a tweet. Let me know that you listen to the show. It's nice to hear from folks. Certainly. I had a question and then it disappeared, which, you know, not the first time that's happened, but, oh, the streak. Yeah, the running streak. How could I forget about that? So you tried it, and I've tried running streaks before, and I'm for myself, very anti-running streaks. I've tried a few times, never had success, ended up hating running in general by the time I just said, the hell with it, and I'm going to take a day off, and then that usually solves all the problems. You know, you went into it, not, it sounds like kind of a little bit skeptical, but gave it a shot and found you loved it, or at least enjoyed it, tolerated it, and enjoyed running every day. How did that getting into the streak process play out? Was it easier than expected, tougher than expected? Were there ever any times when you're just like I have always been, like, just the hell with it, and I'm going to go back to my normal days off, you know, a couple times a week? How did that getting into the streak thing play out for you?
All right. So the reason I started the run streak, it all started from this app called Run Bet. And one of the women in my community was talking about, she was doing this Run Bet and I don't know, she was really struggling with it. And I thought, if somebody else asks me about this, I want to know what it is. I want to be able to explain how the app works and whether or not it's a good idea. So I said, I'm going to try one myself. And I actually just podcasted about it this week because I have been processing how it all went down. So I joined the Run Bet and I had to do like 21 runs in 28 days, but I joined on day 4. So I really only had like 3 rest days, but it was really short runs to start. Like it started out with a half mile run for a few days and then it was a mile run for a few days. And I was like, well, I can do that. That's totally fine. I can do that every day. So that was my plan. I was just going to do, you know, pretty much do the 21 runs right in a row. And I think the longest one was 2 miles. And the strangest thing happened. So after about a week of doing this, I'd be going to bed the night before and getting ready for bed. And I'd be like, oh, I'm so excited. I get to run tomorrow morning. And like, for real, like I've been running for 20 years and I've never had that thought before of being excited to get up and run. And so partly, I think, because I knew the runs were super short for me and it was going to be easy to knock it out and then kind of feel like I checked that off my list for the day. And partly because I really started to enjoy the routine of getting up and going running first thing instead of getting up, having my coffee, you know, checking email and then going for a run, which is the routine I'd gotten myself into. So as I think, you know, when you work from home, right, like my schedule is my own and I tend to work into the evening. So I was delaying my runs until about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. And so there was just something really fun and different and exciting about getting up and doing the run at 7 a.m. And so I did that for about 3 weeks and I thought, you know, this is kind of awesome. I'm going to just make it 30 days and then I'll stop. Because the thing I noticed was my legs were starting to get tired because I wasn't taking any rest days. And I was still like super active everywhere else, you know, like going to spin class or, you know, I'd, you know, walk a couple miles after my run was done. So it wasn't like I did a half mile and then went back home and went back to bed. Like I still, you know, did another workout or whatever. So my legs were getting kind of tired. And I was also starting to think, if I take a day off, I might never run again. And which is completely illogical, but I could see my brain wanting to be perfect and kind of going to that sort of inner mean girl place of, you know, this is just a fluke. And if you quit, you'll stop running forever. And I'm like, what is that all about? So I finally on day 31, I was like, all right, I'm going to take a rest day tomorrow. And I actually made myself take a rest day. And it was amazing. I watched Netflix all day long. It's the best. And then the next day I got up and I went running again and it still felt amazing. So I've kind of fallen into a pretty nice routine now where I'm doing maybe 4 to 5 days a week at this point. And which is, I was more of a 3 to 4 day a week runner before, but now I'm like, I think 4 to 5 days is probably where I want to be now. So, but yeah, I don't recommend doing it on the regular, I guess, especially like if you're training for a long race. You know, like this run streak was easy for me because the longest run I did was about 3 miles. So there wasn't really a huge, you know, drain on my system other than that my legs were getting kind of tired. But I think if you're throwing long runs in there because you're training for a half marathon or a marathon or, you know, something else, then rest days are super important. And I think a run streak is more like a fun thing you do maybe to get you through the winter rather than a serious training tool.
That's a great way to put it, and something that I don't think I've ever heard from anybody who's been who's done the streaks and gone through it is that, yeah, like if you're doing serious mileage, it's probably not the best thing. But if you're keeping everything short and snappy and just, you know, kind of that motivator, then maybe it works a bit better. That's a great perspective.
Yeah, it was really fun. I would probably do it again, but again, I think it's a winter thing for me and not a training thing.
Yeah. Well, and you know, again, kind of almost playing devil's advocate to myself, you could almost see, like, just like how you did, you know, by keeping the runs very short, you know, there could be a good base building effect as long as everything's easy, everything's short, you're not pushing anything to where you're really breaking yourself down, and hopefully maybe you have a little bit of a base coming into it before you start. Probably not the best place to start for somebody who's new to the sport.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Is I think if you're, and I tell this to my runners all the time, if you're brand new, I don't think you should run more than 3 times a week for at least a month until you can see, you know, how your body's going to react to it. Because sometimes, you know, it takes a little while for biomechanical issues to start, you know, making themselves known, and you don't want to find out, you know, 2 weeks of running every day that like, oh, there's like something goofy with your gait and maybe you need orthotics or, you know, there's like a million different things. Like you want to ease your body into that. So yeah, if you're brand new, do not do a run streak. It's a terrible idea.
There's a lot of things that, and I think maybe this is something that we as coaches need to be a little bit more verbal about in various places, but especially if you're working with somebody who's a newer runner, there's a lot of things that more veteran runners can do and can get away with because they have the experience, because their bodies have adapted and you know, like they know to listen to their bodies a bit better. Not that everybody always does, but at least they kind of know some of those signs and symptoms versus when you're new and you see somebody, oh, this person runs 5 days a week, or this person's had a 3-year run streak. Cause there's, Lord knows, there's some of those people out there that I don't know how they do it, but it works for them. but when you're new, like, yeah, there's not only things that you're finding about yourself, but your body's adapting, your body's adjusting. And the last thing you want to do is go, I'm going to go into running now and I'm going to run every day. And now you're broken down 4 weeks later and, you know, injured and not being able to do anything for 6 weeks. Cause that's a good recipe to not ever try to run again. So definitely something to keep in mind.
Yeah, it is. And I know it's really exciting when you're a new runner because you're like, oh my God, look what my body can do. I wonder what else it can do. And you just want to keep pushing and pushing. And yeah, like you said, it's like, then you're going to end up in your 6 weeks off of running because you're injured. And then you think, oh, running injured me, when it was really like, it wasn't running. It was just doing too much too soon.
Yeah, exactly. So Jill, as we're getting close to wrapping up today, but I have one more question that has kind of slipped my mind, but it's come back and it's a bit more on the generic side, but whatever, it is what it is. Whenever I talk to running coaches, I love to get kind of a good piece of advice, a good tip, something like that, that you just, you know, are all in on your belief that this is something that runners really should keep in mind. And a lot of times the things that I've said and have, you know, continued to preach, but it's always nice to get a different voice, maybe reinforcing some of the same principles. So, you know, from your coaching perspective, what is something that most runners would be wise to incorporate, to not incorporate, to do something like that? A good piece of advice that kind of covers most folks that is an area that you've seen that runners tend to be, you know, could stand to improve upon.
Okay, well, this is a tough one. I mean, there's like a million things running through my mind right now. So I think from the perspective of the population of runners that I work with, I would say one of the most important pieces of advice I give to all my newest runners is actually slow down. Because this is specifically when they're starting to run maybe 2 or 3 miles or more, and in the beginning of the run, their legs are fresh and they're just running as fast as they can, and they don't really have that concept of like pacing themselves. And so what happens is they'll run the first mile really fast, and then the second mile is a little bit slower, and then the third mile is starting to feel really hard. And by the fourth mile, they're like, oh, I can't make it 4 miles because I had to walk because I was tired. And I'm like, all right, slow down in the beginning so that you have energy left for the end of your run. And I think that, like, most people don't want to slow themselves down when they can go faster. But I think it's a really important skill to develop, is that modulation of your speed and being able to literally just run at whatever pace you need to run so that you can conserve your energy for the entire experience.
That's a great one. And certainly we've talked many a time, as the listeners all know, about the importance of slowing down, whether it's like you said, to pace yourself better, because that's always a struggle. Even for advanced runners, that can still be a struggle. And also just for, you know, running easy, doing your easy runs easy. That's running slower, slowing down is a good piece of advice across all sections. So thank you for that. So, the final question here, Jill, the way we always like to kind of wrap up the episodes is to, ask what I call a philosophical question, which sometimes can sound a little bit scary, and it's really, really not that bad, but it's something that's kind of like the introductory question. It's very open-ended, and, you're welcome to take it and run with it for 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever you need. And you're also welcome to answer it with, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 words. And of course, most of the answers tend to be somewhere in the middle of all that. But it would be curious, you know, with all that running has kind of brought into your life, you know, from just getting started with it as a way to kind of improve your health to where you are now and whatever the future might hold with Not Your Average Runner and the podcast and the books and the coaching and all of the things that are going on. What one or two things, you know, you can answer a couple if coming up with one is too much, but what are some things that running has really taught you that if looking back upon it, you think maybe I wouldn't have learned that lesson, or maybe I wouldn't have developed this type of skill set that extends beyond running if you hadn't, you know, fallen into the sport and had running kind of get its grips upon you, and then eventually you returned the favor and you got your grips upon running as well. So, you know, I've said before, and I think I said it even earlier to you, that I think running is a great teacher, a great metaphor for life. What are one or two of those things that running has really taught you that, you know, that like I said, you wouldn't have maybe learned if you hadn't started running back in the day?
I think running has taught me that there's really nothing that I can dream up that I can't do. It's taught me that I can do things that seem impossible, I guess. And, you know, when I first started running, it seemed impossible to be able to run a mile. And then, you know, I did a 5K, and then it seemed impossible that I would be able to go farther than that. And I did a triathlon, and it seemed like every time I kind of increased an accomplishment, it sort of, you know, taught me that, like, you always think that the next level is impossible, and it never is. So I think that, like, that running and, you know, and triathlon as well has really taught me that, like, hey, just if you can dream it, you can make it happen. And, like, that's a really important life lesson to have. And I think as an entrepreneur, running has taught me that if I can dream of writing a book, I can make it happen. Or if I can dream of doing a podcast, I can make it happen. That like, it doesn't have to be, you know, this goal that's out there that I'm thinking, oh, it would be nice to do that, but I'll never be able to do that. I mean, that literally anything is possible. And so I think that that's been a pretty good lesson. And sometimes I forget that lesson. And very often, like literally all it takes to adjust my mood and to adjust my attitude is to go running for 30 minutes. And there's just something about like the rhythm. So I don't know if first of all, it's metaphorical, right? That like, you know, one step in front of the other and you can go long distances and you can do amazing things. But there's also something I think very physical and energetic about running that shifts our brain as well. And it's partly, I'm sure, endorphins, but there's also something about the rhythm of like one foot in front of the other that it really just, it's like hitting the reset button if you're having a bad day or if you're getting really down on yourself. So yeah, I think that running has really taught me that like nothing is impossible. That's my favorite. That's my favorite lesson from running.
That's as per usual. I'm not going to try to mess it up. That's a beautiful way to wrap things up. And so I'm going to get out of the way and not muddy the waters at all. So once again, guys, notyouraveragerunner.com is the website, on the Instagrams at notyouraveragerunner, and on the podcast app of your choice. Go ahead and give us a little subscription. A little subscription love to Jill. The show is Not Your Average Runner. Comes out every Thursday morning. Spoiler alert. Little tease, you might hear your boy on the show in the coming weeks. So go check it out, get subscribed, and definitely enjoy it. It's definitely a good show, whether or not you consider yourself in kind of the perfect target demographic. There's lots of stuff that you can still learn and apply as it is. So dizruns.com/551 is the link for the show notes. If you need any of the links, anything we talked about, we'll have it all linked up there as well. So Jill, thank you so much for taking the time today. Certainly appreciate having a chance to finally connect after as long as it's been that we've kind of tried to do this here and there and finally able to make it happen. So pleasure chatting with you. Looking forward to staying in touch and certainly wishing you nothing but the best going forward.
Oh, thanks. And I can't wait to interview you on my show.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Jill and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was one of your big takeaways from the conversation that we had today? For me, there are lots of things that we talked about that I thought were really interesting, things that really made sense, things that made me stop and think for a second. But one of the biggest ones was something that I had no idea we were going to get to, no idea was even happening, but was when Jill talked about going on a run streak. And, you know, I've maybe haven't verbalized this as much, but I've been pretty against the idea of a run streak. I talk about the need to listen to your body. I talk about, you know, rest days being as important to your training and to your growth as a runner as any training that you're going to do. I kind of had my mind was kind of closed. I was admittedly, not excited to admit it, but admittedly kind of closed-minded about the idea of a run streak. And hearing Jill talk about it, hearing Jill talk about her experience with it, and just the fact that she was up for trying it kind of convicted me a little bit that it's a good thing to try things once in a while. I mean, shoot, I'm on a year-long experiment of trying out heart rate training and trying out low carb, high fat diet. Why wouldn't I be open to the idea of maybe trying a run streak again? Why wouldn't I be open to the idea of trying whatever, trying a different, you know, trying yoga, trying Pilates, things that I've tried in the past. I've been open to trying new things, yet the idea of a run streak I was pretty close-minded about. And so, you know, my takeaway is just to remember that as a coach and just as a runner and as a human being, we need to be open to trying different things. I mean, trying to get Addison to try new foods, try healthy food options, try different vegetables, things like that. I mean, I live it in my parental life. I live it in my coaching life of trying different things and experimenting on myself before trying them or encouraging clients to try them. Why wouldn't I be open to the idea of trying something that maybe I've tried in the past and didn't enjoy it, but maybe try it again? You know, I say all that to say I don't have any plans to try a run streak anytime soon. But I need to be open to the idea of trying different things once in a while. And I would encourage you to maybe be open to that idea as well. So that was my takeaway. What about you? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And as always, you can head over to the show notes for any episode and leave your feedback there. And once again, the show notes for today's episode, DizRuns.com/551. So that is where we will officially put the bow on things. Once again, be ready on raceday.com. The book is available. It is alive. You can order it right now if you are so inclined. And thank you for everyone who already has ordered it, whether pre-order or just in the past couple days since it's been alive. Really appreciate it, and certainly am looking forward to hearing from you what you think about it, what you like, what you didn't like. What are your thoughts? Let me know. And if you've gotten the book already, you know there's a little something-something if you leave a review for the book as well. So if you haven't gotten to the end yet, you'll find it. You'll find that little it's not really an Easter egg because it's not hidden. But thank you guys for all the love on the book so far. And again, certainly hoping to... Looking forward to hearing more about what you have to say, what your thoughts are, and can't wait to start seeing some race success stories, some medal shots, some bling shots after you've put your training plan into play. You've created your own plan, followed it, and I can't wait to see the success results. So be ready on raceday.com. And with that, let's pull this ship into harbor, shall we? Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, go ahead and share it. Press the share button on your podcast listening app of choice and post it out there and tell some other folks about the show. Thanks again to Jill for joining us today. And until next time, please be well. Please take good care and happy running, y'all. Take care. Talk soon. See you guys.